2 o'clock, 19 to say something. One of the ways I like to consider the life of meditation is a life of craft, and to look at this practices that we do is similar to woodwork or weaving or potting, or the idea that we as human beings can develop skills and we can increase those skills, we can make them stronger, and we can watch and be aware of the results of our efforts. We can see where our skills are effective and so on. So, and that opposed that to the idea that you're just trying to get something. Like if you're meditating with the idea of trying to obtain something or get rid of something, then you always feel frustrated, I think. Whereas if you look at this practice as you've got a piece of wood and you want to craft a piece of wood, if you've got yarn and you want to make a textile or whatever, then you can work with it, you can do things with it, whatever the fabric is like or whatever the wood is like. So I think in this craft, one of the descriptions I like is the idea of the craft of the heart. And that to do good craft, to do good meditation, you need a sense of goodwill. I think that's terribly important, because if it's simply trying to get rid of things with a sense of self-judgment, or just trying to attain things because you've read about them, there usually isn't any goodwill. There's striving and struggle and such like. Whereas if you think of the ways of the heart which are conjoined with goodwill, generosity, kindness, forgiveness, compassion, joy, equanimity, these are all aspects of goodwill, aren't they? And so the attitude that we bring to this practice, just the very state of mind we bring to it, is important to awaken to. So we have, throughout Theravada Buddhism, we have all kinds of practices to bring up a sense of kindness. And they're interesting in the sense that they, like the way you just keep precepts, eh? You think that, like, I would not want anyone to shoot me, so I'm not going to shoot anyone. I wouldn't want to be robbed. Have you ever been robbed? I've been robbed in India. It's not a nice thing. So I'm not going to do that to others. I wouldn't want to be cheated on or exploited, so I'm not going to do that to others. I don't like to be gossiped about and ripped down by others, so I don't want to do that to others. And so on. So you have a sense of integrity and goodness in your life from that kind of perspective. So when I start practice, I always start to some sense of kindness. One of the things I've been talking about is a lovely way I was developing joy with my mother. And when I went to the monastery on the we started the monastery about 4 years after I'd been living with my mother, and so I was able to go on the weekends to the monastery, which was very restful. And then I'd come back on a Sunday afternoon, and I would go, and the driver would go to a florist, and I'd get some cut flowers for Mom. She loved flowers. And then I would come upstairs to her apartment, and I'd come in, and she'd be happy to see me. And then I'd give her the flowers, and she'd be very happy. And her face would just light up with this kind of love and joy. And I'd really look at my mom's face and appreciate her happiness. And that's what we call mudita, one of the four divine abidings, one of the four brahmaviharas in Buddhist practice. And so mudita is a sense of joy at the happiness of others. So that in itself was a beautiful thing for me to experience. But then I would take that to my meditation. So in the evening I would bring up that memory and that vision, and then I would start with that, which is a really neat way to start your meditation with happiness, rather than with striving to get something you don't have. So you can use joy, or you can use compassion, or you can use gratitude. I use gratitude a lot. So if I look at the Buddha image, or I usually have like a lot of pictures of my teachers on my shrine, and so I look at Ajahn Sumedho, I look at Ajahn Chah, and when I see their pictures, it just this is a great feeling. Thank you. And thank you for this teaching, thank you for this opportunity. And then I make that conscious, and I begin the meditation with that. That's generosity. And so, whatever way one does that, you can see how it would set up your heart in a really skillful way. And if you look at, say, generosity as opposed to striving, when I feel, or let's say gratitude, if I feel grateful, there's no desire there. Right? I don't want to get this, I don't want to get gratitude, I'm just grateful, thank you. So if I can make conscious feelings of gratitude and then begin mindfulness of breathing or whatever practice I do, I'm sort of, I've already set up in mind a very good foundation, a foundation of goodwill. Now, like last night I was saying, this is a reflective consideration. So when I say to people, try practicing gratitude. If they mistake what I'm saying, then they'll say, oh, I should feel grateful. Which becomes a kind of inner demand, I should feel grateful. But that's not, that's just an idea. And then you feel guilty if you don't feel grateful, because you can't always feel grateful. But gratitude is a part of the heart, isn't it? We do feel grateful, and we can make it conscious. Not always. Sometimes we're just so down in the dumps, or so ticked off at life that you just can't get there, that's okay. But oftentimes, if we just think about it, reflect upon it, we can bring our consciousness to a sense of gratitude. And that's skillful, and that's a craft. That's a craft that you can do. And imagine if you do that, and we do it, don't we? You do that every morning. You look at the Buddha image, you look at a picture of my mom or dad, and I say, thank you. And that adds up, doesn't it? That adds up over the days and years to a kind of inclination to go there, a tendency to go there, a remembering to go there. And then contrast that to someone who wakes up just kind of whining about whatever, you know, complaining about this or that, complaining, and just doing that every morning. Waking up, complaining, waking up, the world's coming to an end, the tuna fish are down the tube, and the place is going to heat up, and what Buddha Dhamma is going to burn up, and you know, we'll have no more air, and the planet's going to disappear, and you know, you can go on and on like that. And maybe it's true, but what does it do to your mind? It's not a very happy space to be. So if you think about craft, right, think about craft, you think about your mind, and then what are we putting into the mind, what kind of ideas are we putting into the mind, what kind of intentions are we making, what kind of repeated intentions are we doing? And that all adds up for good or for ill. So, like a conscious life, a kind of deliberate spiritual life is one where we awaken and then we make these wholesome efforts and wholesome intentions to uplift the mind. So I would suggest that when you begin your practice, throughout the day, try to bring up some sense of wholesomeness in that sense of goodwill. It might be just the environment, so nature can do that. If you look at, this is probably one of the most beautiful environments I've seen in my life. And just the tranquility and the friendliness and the beauty of it. And just to stop and listen to the silence. Look at one of these lovely trees without the bark. And just allow that image to come to you. Or just the blue sky, say. The blue somehow, it's a very happy color, isn't it? The sky blue. I don't know why, but when I just look at that blue, it makes my heart really happy. So when you stop your mind, just allow nature to affect you in this really wholesome way. You bring up a sense of goodwill. So each of us will have a different access to that, some through nature, some through iconography, some through deliberate mental practice. But what is that in our life that can come to come to a sense of goodness and gratitude and compassion. So that to me seems an important thing to continue chakra development. So I try to do that whenever I start meditation, and I do it deliberately through the heart. So the way I meditate on the Brahma Viharas or the ideas of kindness is to I use breath, and then I just first of all get my awareness of the breath going, and then I bring my attention to the center of my chest, and I feel a physical feeling at the center of my chest, and then I start to introduce people into that. So I might think of my teacher, Ajahn Sumedho. So on the in-breath, I think of Paul Sumedho. On the in-breath, I imagine him, and the out-breath, I say thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And that activates that heart center, that very real possibility we have of feeling kindness. And so I often do that for like 10, 20 minutes, because it's a really nice thing to do. So it both has breath in it. Breath is very calming. But it has this attitude. It has this attitude of goodwill. And that is a good foundation for both calming the mind and opening the heart. In terms of, so if you think of this, the cultivation of meditation as a craft, then probably the most important thing is that we learn how to awaken the mind. And that I did yesterday with you, I suggested we use hearing, listening. So when I suggested yesterday, I asked you to try that with me. I said, just listen. Stop thinking. Listen. First of all, stop thinking, right? If you're thinking about listening, then you're not listening. But if you just stop thinking and listen, several things to notice. First of all, the mind is silent. The mind is present. It's present to sound. But it's also a mind which isn't trying to get a particular sound or get a particular experience, really just listening. So it's actually free from desire and free from aversion. If someone starts a chainsaw outside, you might start to feel annoyed. And then the listening would go to aversion to sound. But if you start with something neutral, like right now, sound, listen. And then take that as the standard. And if it's analogous to riding a bicycle. When you ride a bicycle, first of all, you have to figure out balances. You're not going to get anywhere if you just fall right and left. So for me, awakening the mind to the way things are in this moment by listening is like getting balance in the bicycle. Just get balance. Okay. This is it. Now notice it's not, you're not becoming. You're just noticing. And that noticing is the balance. And then the question is, how can I sustain that clarity of mind? Not get a certain kind of high experience or refined sense of whatever, but how can I just sustain balance? The balance of presence, the balance of knowing the way things are. So then listening is synonymous with awareness. It's not just about listening to sound, it's a particular way I pay attention. So I can listen to, be aware of just be aware of your right knee. And just ask you, be aware of your right knee. Now, to be aware of my right knee, I have to stop thinking. And when I feel the pressure, heat. But what's important there is I am present. I'm present to a physical sensation. I'm not saying a physical sensation shouldn't be anything. Okay, then take it to the feeling of breathing. What does the feeling of breath feel like? You awaken to feeling of breath. But you can't think. If you're thinking, you're not feeling the breath. And then can I sustain that awake quality of consciousness, that balance of riding the bicycle? Can I sustain this for just one in-breath? And when out-breath. And that's it. Finished. So now do it for 2 breaths deep. And so, if again, if you look at it as a craft, and if you, let's say, if you're a weaver, and you're trying to weave Persian carpets, which are not quite Persian, but getting there. With weaving, you have to get when you throw the weft across, you have to get the tension right when the cloth goes in and out. So as you're weaving, each time you throw the weft across, you have different tension on it. And by just doing it, you figure out what the right tension is, and you begin to have nice parallel edges on your piece of woven cloth. But how do you learn that? How do you do that? Well, you get the idea of how to do it, and you train. You train by trying things out, making effort, not making enough effort, too tight, too loose, until you get this kind of lovely balance, in-breath, out-breath, in-breath, out-breath. So to me, in that sort of goodwill, the attitude, and then just the sense of what the awakened mind is like. It's not rocket science. It's not something you have to get next week. It's something that's here all the time. So what prevents one, first of all, from noticing that type of consciousness? What prevents one from noticing the awake mind or being awake? And the second question would be, how can one remember that? So it's a matter of remembering. Well, in terms of developing meditation practice, what prevents many of us from noticing is that we fall asleep. Right? Drowsiness, dullness in meditation, the capacity to stay with the moment gets sort of overwhelmed by like oatmeal in your brain. It feels this kind of coagulated mind falling asleep all the time. So then you have a challenge in the craft. Just as you have a challenge with a difficult piece of wood when you're trying to plane it, or very refined yarn which is very stretchy when you're trying to weave. In the same way, you have problems, difficulties and challenges when you're trying to meditate. So these challenges, which we call hindrances, come into consciousness, and then you have to have enough mindfulness to say, okay, there's a strange energy going on here. How am I going to work with this? How am I going to learn about this? So then there's a sense of investigation. When one investigates the nature of the hindrance. So let's say if it's dullness, first of all you have to notice you're dull. And that quite often is difficult because people can experienced meditators, especially, kind of they develop a good posture and they kind of know they're meditating, and they can just be sleepy and not know they're sleepy. Just be kind of bobbing up and down and not know they're sleepy. And I remember once when I went back to visit Mom when I was living in Thailand, I think, or maybe England. And I just wanted to check my posture, so I decided to... And someone had told me I was suffering from dullness and sleepiness. And I said, that's not true. So I put myself in front of a full-length mirror. And I set my clock for 10 minutes. And then after 10 minutes, I just... When my little clock rang, I looked at my posture without moving, and I discovered that I was way over off starboard. I was just way over. And I didn't even know that. I wasn't even aware of that. And I was surprised. Well, I thought I was meditating. And somehow, there wasn't really that much body awareness, and my mind wasn't so clear. And so then I saw, this drowsiness now has become a hindrance. And so then I started to learn some pranayama. Started to do some deep breathing meditation. And so now when I, like this morning, I felt sleepy. So then I knew from the craft, right? This is a particular type of piece of wood that I have to be careful with. And so the way I've learned to deal with sleepiness is through using the breath in a very deep way. and then using the posture with the breath. So I increase the amplitude of my breathing. Long breath in, long breath out, long breath in, long breath out. Really make it deep. Now that in itself, if you're sleepy, you won't remember to breathe unless you do it deliberately. So if you're sleepy, you start to make a deep breath and forget to breathe, you get dull again. So just the fact that I have the intention and strength and energy and mindfulness to make my breath deeper helps me to be more awake. And then what I do is I stretch my posture, and I imagine that my head is being pulled to the ceiling, and I imagine that my butt is going, the base of my spine is going into the ground. So I pull up, I pull up and push down, and I stretch my spine and keep with a deep breathing. So this morning I had to do that for about 10 minutes. And then all of a sudden it was gone. Dullness is gone. And then I could let go of that particular piece of the craft. That kind of doing, energy, effort, depends on where your meditation is at. It's going to be different each meditation. But there has to be some sense of consciousness. What's going on now? What's the particular energy level that I'm experiencing now? How is that energy? The opposite of dullness, of course, can be restlessness. You know, you just fidget, you keep looking at the clock, you kind of look at the Buddha image, you can't get your posture right, you keep shifting around. The time is very, very slow. It's like, this is never going to end. The monks fall asleep, you'll never ring the bell, or whatever disaster is about to happen. You begin to say, that's obviously a different kind of energy than dullness. Dullness, you don't quite know you're there. Restlessness is like you're here too long. And so you say, okay, so how do I work with that? How can I calm the mind with a restless mind? And so the way I typically do that is to put a lot of relaxation into the out-breath. I take the out-breath and just really just let it go and don't worry about the in-breath. Put a lot of relaxation into the end of the out-breath, so use the breath again. Whatever difficulties you're facing in the meditation practice, you need to somehow develop a methodology where you both understand the hindrances, know how to work with them when they come up, and craft your heart so that it comes to a sense of peace through those hindrances. Now, when you pick up a meditation object, be it the breath, or some kind of body awareness, other body awareness, or mental practice, we need to make quite strong intentions in the beginning with the object of meditation. So let's say if I decide I want to do breath meditation, I have to actually say that to myself. I mean, it sounds so obvious, but I have to say, now I'm going to do breath. And that clear intention, that clear thought, then focuses me on the breath, obviously. That's the way I work. I use thought. But this isn't just random thought. It's a thought which is directed to the object, now the breath. And when we begin a meditation, we have to remind ourselves of that intention, maybe very often, if our mind doesn't settle on the breath. So I might have to say, in, out, 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 out. Ajahn Sumedho once told me when he began his meditation practice, way back when, his mind was so busy, he just had to say, let go, let go, let go, let go, let go, let go. His mind was just, he wouldn't stop thinking. So he just placed all that thought with one thought. But in terms of intention, if you think, what happens with meditation is we forget. We forget the object of meditation and we go off and think about last week or next week, or plan something, or design something, or worry about something, whatever. So your mind goes off into some kind of pattern of thinking. And so that's a non-remembering, yeah? You're not remembering what you're supposed to be doing. So the way of remembering then is through thought and intention and thought. You know, I'm making an intention to watch my breath. And then I have to make that intention quite deliberately, maybe very often, until my mind settles on the breath. So I might say, in breath, out, in. I might just use that. And after a while, I don't have to make those thoughts so much anymore because my mind settles on the breath and I can let go of thought. But if my mind is wandering a lot, I need to use intention a lot to come back to the breath. So you start to combine those elements. First of all, that intention to notice my breath is from goodwill. You know, it's from a good heart, it's from kindness. But it has strength, a direction. Then what I'm doing is I'm remembering this awake state of mind. I'm remembering to be awake. And I'm using the breath, say in this case, I'm using the breath to sustain that awake mind for a whole in-breath and a whole out-breath. A whole in-breath. And each time I wander, I remember and I make the intention until my mind begins to stick to the object. So it is a crap, isn't it, when you think about it? And if you say to yourself, I can't meditate, well, that's a thought, and then you go back to the breath. Or if you think, this isn't working, that's a thought, and you go back to the breath. Right? It's just a thought, it's just an idea. Now, where are the thoughts their mind goes into, we have to give those up for a while. So in some way, you have to say, well, during this meditation, I'm not going to solve all my worldly problems. Or I'm not going to invent a new wheel, or I'm not, whatever my mind likes to go to, I'm going to give all that up. So all the worldly concerns for a period of time, we just have to see ourselves, not now. And that's another kind of intention you make. Not never, just not now. So let's say if you're meditating and you have some worldly problem that you really have to deal with when you get back, you'll deal with it. You'll figure it out, but for this time, for this half hour, if the mind starts to try to go there, say no, back to the breath. Or if it tries to rehash something about some difficulty that you wish you wouldn't have done things the way you did them, not now. So this is not now, just the breath. And that, but not with violence, with kindness. So there's a kindness and a directness that you keep applying the mind to. And all those things add up. You're constantly coming from goodwill. You're constantly applying the mind to the object. You're constantly remembering the awake mind. And all those things add up to a beautiful piece of cloth or a beautiful cabinet or whatever you will. They add up because you keep repeating them. You keep repeating them. The mind becomes that. With the walking meditation, we try to combine walking and sitting meditation. I don't know how you learn walking meditation. Some people do walking meditation very slowly. Ajahn Chah said to us, well, he saw people doing this really kind of slow walking. You just raise your foot. And he said, well, what do you do if you have diarrhea? So you can do that, but you want to be careful not just to think you have to control things all the time. Mindfulness isn't control. Mindfulness is waking up. So in walking meditation, you choose the path. Mark the ends of the path, maybe 20 paces, say, 25 paces, whatever you like. But mark the ends of the path, beginning and end, two ends. And then starting at one end, awaken the mind. Bring your mind to that sense of awakening. You're here now, life is this way now. So you awaken the mind, it's most important. And then you start walking and use your body, just the movement of the body, the feet touching the ground, walking to the other end. Now, during that time, you probably start thinking about something. And if the thoughts are quite intense, then stop, just stop. And maybe even repeat the thought for one sentence. And then stop and listen. Notice the gap between thoughts. Notice the space around the thought. And just stop the mind and listen. Come back to listening. And then start walking again to the other end. When you get to the other end, stop. And keep breaking up the thinking patterns. Keep breaking up the sense of self that comes up in whatever problems are coming up or difficulties. Just stop and listen. And notice that it's just a thought, just an idea. And notice the space around it, notice the silence. And then turn around quite deliberately, quite mindfully, and then stop, listen. And then start again, feel the body moving. And if you start generating a lot of thoughts, stop again. So you begin to break up the seeming reality of these thinking patterns to see that they're just energies in mind which come up, and stop, listen. And do that for half an hour, you start to break up the seeming, you know, the kind of coagulated nature of thought. You get space around it. And then you come back to the sitting practice. You can see if you can do that, if you can sustain sitting and walking for 2-3 hours, you start to get a lot of strength of mindfulness. You start to, because you really, it's a very intentional kind of thing now. It's not just random mindfulness when you're washing the dishes, as it were. You're really very devoted now and dedicated to being awake. And that creates a lot of energy for being awake in the future. It's very, very powerful. And if you keep seeing it as a craft, so you're walking on a meditation path, okay, how do I do walking meditation? How do I feel the body? How do I wake up? How do I do this? And you keep, rather than just trying to suppress thought, or just thinking all the time, how do I notice the space around thought? The gaps between thought? And so that the combination of walking, sitting, sitting and walking, sitting and walking, becomes quite a beautiful pattern for awakening the mind and being present. So there's lots of other, a whole bunch of ideas there that can digest. Anyone have any quite specific questions on hindrances or anything in your own practice that you need to review before we start meditating? Yes? Why do you think you're not wise? Why does that question come up? So you're sitting there and you're meditating and you're feeling I'm not. This isn't.
The body sits really good.
The body sits good, yeah.
Sit very straight, very good posture.
Okay.
And very calm, very peaceful.
Right.
Yeah, but the mind.
What's the mind doing?
What's
the mind doing?
The mind is not too clear.
Not clear means there's a lot of thinking or dullness, or how would you describe it?
It's not thinking.
Is it like porridge? Or is it like ice? Or
no.
So it's drowsiness. When you walk away from meditation, do you feel peaceful?
Yes.
More peaceful than when you sat down? No, you always feel peaceful. And so why do you describe that as a lack of wisdom? I'm just trying to, fathom where you're at. Why would you say it's a lack of wisdom? Why does that come up for you? You understand what I'm asking?
The thing is, I don't know what the mind would know.
You don't know. So is it doubt? Doubt comes up? Like, I don't know if I'm getting there, or... What kind of thoughts are there? Are there any thoughts? Say that again. You don't know what's going on in the mind.
Yeah.
You don't know what kind of thoughts are there.
No thought at all, but I think, what the mind, how is my mind, is.
So it's doubt.
Yeah.
You don't have much thought going on. Your body's straight, right? Sounds pretty good to me. I think a lot of people will trade in with you. but there's still a sense of insufficiency or lack or doubt or... Right.
Really good. Yeah.
Okay.
Peaceful.
And what is the unhappiness of the mind?
I feel happy because we're sitting. Yeah.
So what would you like it to be?
I want to know what's going on.
Okay, so you nothing usually. I would suggest here, because I'm not quite sure where you're at, that's why I'm sort of interrogating like this here. I'm not trying to torture you, honest. I'd suggest that whenever you have any sense of doubt like this, I would suggest you use the Four Noble Truths. Okay? So in the Four Noble Truths, we say there's dukkha, there's some sense of lack or insufficiency or discontent, yeah? And that discontent is caused by some kind of attachment to a desire. And then the third noble truth is the cessation of that desire. So can you maybe, as you meditate, make conscious, what do I want and what I don't want? Bring up that question, where's the wanting here? Yeah. Do I want something else, or what am I looking for? So, one of the ways to bring clarity of the mind is what we call Dhamma Vijaya, or investigation. We begin to look into consciousness, and what we investigate is the Four Noble Truths. The attachment to Tanha, yeah? And the abandonment of Tanha. So use that, that's a very good model to kind of use if you have a doubt. What is the craving here? Where is the craving here? That's one way to go. Because if it's just doubt, like if it's just intellectual doubt, usually it's the desire to know. I want to know, I want to be sure. And you'll never get beyond doubt by thinking. Thinking will always take you to more doubt. The only way you can go beyond doubt, intellectual doubt, is to stop thinking. Because right now, if we stop thinking, there's no doubt. And you start thinking, what is he talking about? That's doubt. So if you want to put an end to the intellectual doubt, just don't think. Listen. Huh? So that's around intellectual doubt. But in terms of samadhi, if you just have a kind of cloudy mind, then you have to take your object of meditation and you have to somehow sharpen it up. So what object of meditation are you using? What do you do for meditation? Are you using breath or?
Yeah, breath.
Using breath, and where are you focusing on the breath?
The chest.
You sound doubtful. Sure. Okay. I suggest if you do the chest, that's fine. But then make it more conscious. Make it more conscious by really inflating your chest when you breathe in, and then make more conscious the physical sensations of the breath. So you bring your attention away from thought, away from the head, down into the body, down into this area. So if you do the whole breath, or you do the belly, or the nose, it doesn't matter. But maybe just experiment. Be very deliberate now in choosing where you're going to watch the breath. Yeah? So when you begin the meditation, just say to yourself, breath and chest, something like that. And then really just see if you can stay right there, but with goodwill, not with force, huh? With goodwill, with kindness, with gentleness. And see if that clarifies the mind. So there's several issues here. Sometimes it's just a cloudy mind, you need more focus. Sometimes it's intellectual doubt, and you need to stop trying to figure things out. So. And just let go with trust and just be with the breath. Just see, what happens if I just stay with the breath for 9 hours? Right? And your mind starts to doubt, just no, 8.5 hours more, please. Stay with the breath, still, and see what happens. No guarantee, but just see what happens. And then let me know tomorrow what happens. Okay?